Welcome to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates, where we believe that advocacy is the answer. Hey, everybody, this is Angela, and I'm here with John and Jim. And today we're going to talk about some of the most difficult cases that you face as a children's lawyer, and that is when your client has been severely physically abused. One of the things we know that's happening right now is that although in many places there is a reduction in the overall number of cases, there have been some spikes in more severe cases. You can read a little more about this in the Orlando Sentinel and Washington Post articles, which we will put in the show notes. The spike is likely a result of the family stressors that many families are feeling right now as a result of the pandemic. And I think it's important to note that but for the pandemic, we would not be seeing some of these families. Therefore, it's particularly important that we consider whether there's a family bond that can be preserved while the child is also protected from future harm. Also, every lawyer faces these cases at some point, and we should always give careful consideration to severing all family bonds, even when there is serious injury. If you don't have the energy to listen to this podcast now, it'll be here for you should you need it in the future. And we promise to do something a little lighter next week.
It is a difficult subject to listen to during this time, but we feel it's essential to get into it because of the spike that we're seeing in some parts of the country. Now, what we're going to go over today is an overview. It's not an exhaustive list of everything you should do in these cases. They're very complicated cases, and you need to use, of course, your own professional judgment to figure the right strategy for your particular case. Rather, what we want to do today is give you a few key strategies that you can overlay over every case, especially if you're a new attorney and you've never handled one of these cases, or it's been a while because they don't come up all that often in some jurisdictions where there are smaller populations. You may not have a case like this, hopefully, come up but once or twice a year, or maybe even less frequently as opposed to in the larger metropolitan areas where they are a little more common. You need to always do your own independent review because they are high profile cases, right? They do hit the media. And from experience, we do know that state agencies tend to sometimes react to public pressure. So sometimes it seems like there's a rather quick rush to judgment that this is a TPR case. This is a termination of parental rights case because the abuse is egregious. And there is such a public outcry in these matters. So with that said, we're going to give you a few of things that we do when we are faced with one of these cases.
Yeah. And even if the outcry and the outrage is just among the community that you're working in or the attorneys working and social workers working on the case, you don't want to get lost in the fog of war. And so the first thing you want to do is to narrow down the time of the abuse, the time of the injury. And this is something you want to jump on as soon as you get the case. You want to jump on this because stories change. And so you want to start narrowing down the time of abuse kind of before the parents can maybe figure out that's what you're trying to do. You want to talk to police detectives. You want to talk to the frontline road patrol officer who was on the scene first. If you're dealing with broken bones, you want to talk to the radiologist. You want to talk to the specialist. You also want to always talk to the emergency room doctor. If you're dealing with burns, you want to talk to the specialist, but also the ER doctor. If an ER doctor debrided a burn wound, it can look like an immersion burn. And that ER doctor might be the only one who knows it was a splash burn. And that can be a key difference in an abuse case. So you want to talk to the frontline people like ER docs, road patrol officers, as well as the specialists, maybe the forensic medical people who might see the child later. And those forensic medical experts are, of course, invaluable to us, but they generally see the child later. So that's the first thing we want to talk about, is narrowing down the time of the injury, because that's going to lead you to the second thing we want to talk about, and that is figuring out who had access to the child within that time frame. Once you understand that a broken bone occurred between point A and point B in time, then you've got a window of time in which you can figure out who was with the child. And so while you're figuring out the time of injury, you also want to be figuring out who had access during that window. And again, and this is another thing you want to jump on fast before everyone gets their footing and figures out what you're trying to do, because you want to get the statements of parents on the record as best as possible, either statements given to police, given to a nurse in the ER, given to a grandparent. But you want to find out what time dad came home from work. What did the child look like when dad came home? What was his statement? Who else was in the home? Those kind of things. And that's going to be crucial to establishing who could be the perpetrator and who cannot. More importantly, who maybe cannot be the perpetrator if mom was at work during the time the brain injury occurred or whatever you may be dealing with. So you can always never rule out the use of deposition. It's our most important tool in our toolkit. Most of us have caseloads that preclude us from doing it regularly, but it's a very important tool in the toolkit, and you want to pull it out whenever you can. Parents may plead the fifth in these things, but keep in mind that it's something you want to do and maybe do early on in the case, even to get as many specifics as you can out of a parent early on before the stories have started to set in and they have their excuses lined up.
And once you've narrowed down the time of the injury and then narrowed down who had access to the child to the best of your ability, then you want to look at those parents who had access to the child, and let's assume it was both parents, and you want to look at their individual histories very closely, because what you're looking for is what are these people's backgrounds and what led them to this moment? And if you are trying to determine who may have done this, it is important to know everything you can about the people who were alone with the child when the injury occurred. It doesn't necessarily mean you will or won't advocate for a case plan, or you will or won't advocate for termination of parental rights just based upon their background, but it's another piece of important information. So if we do see that the father has a history of violence, if we see that he has been violent since he was 12, 13, 14 years of age, if we see cruelty to animals, if we see any child abuse in his background, that's obviously easy stuff to help inform your decision. It doesn't mean he's guilty, but it informs the decision of whether or not this is a case where maybe you go out on a limb and you advocate that one or both of the parents get services, particularly the non-offending parent who the evidence is pointing towards did not know this was happening to the child. And perhaps their greatest sin is not being able to wrap their head around what their partner did to their child in a timely enough manner.
Right. So if you go through this process and you have a high degree of confidence that one of the parents was not involved in the abuse, then you can move on to assessing that parent's ability to keep the child safe.
Right. Like John was saying, a non-offending parent very often is going to take some time to come to grips with the fact that their partner or their spouse or their boyfriend has done this to their child. And so you can't expect them on day one to always understand it the way maybe the rest of the experts on the case can see the facts. It's going to take a process. You might want to use early intervention services for that, like therapy for the parent who you believe is non-offending. Let's assume in this example that the father or boyfriend is the alleged perpetrator who we think might have perpetrated the abuse. Then the mother is going to be someone that may need some therapy to come to grips that this could have happened. Mediations, if you have them in your jurisdiction, are a great place to go into a room and caucus separately with the mother and her attorney and start seeing and addressing the parents as separate entities with separate avenues towards reunification. That's a good place to explain the case to the parent from the child's point of view. The agency's point of view is very often prosecutorial in these cases, for a lot of reasons, a lot of good reasons. But from a child's point of view, if there's a chance to stay with a mother, then you're standing in the shoes of that child and you have an opportunity to go into a room with that mother and her attorney and say, listen, I need you to seriously consider breaking away from dad here and consider the fact that he may be the one who injured me. And here's why, because the time of the abuse was during this time and he was home from work alone with me during these hours. And the doctors are saying this. That's your chance to kind of lay out your facts for the mother and maybe bring her along to to the place where we'd like her to be, which is a non-offending parent that maybe we can work with.
And this is a process, right? Because even though these are called, very often called, expedited termination of parental rights cases, we know that they are anything but generally, because there's a companion criminal investigation and perhaps prosecution, because they are complex and involve medical testimony and depositions, usually of experts, and waiting for medical records, sometimes waiting for medical examiner's reports on siblings who have been murdered, unfortunately. That all takes time. So during that time, what we're saying today is don't be afraid to swim against the current a little bit and really vet the case. Because even though the child has suffered serious injuries, we don't want to compound that by breaking their bond with a natural mother who, like I said earlier, her greatest sin may be taking too long to come to the truth. We want to give her an opportunity to choose protecting her child over protecting her relationship. Some people will never get there, and we acknowledge that. All we're saying today is let's fully explore that. We have that duty to our client. You only get, you know, one birth mother in your life. So let's not just throw that relationship away, because that is where the tide is flowing at the time of the inception of the case. We're asking you to consider all options in every case you get like this, but particularly now, because, you know, like Angela said at the beginning, the spike in serious abuse cases from 1 year ago today to this month, and is telling us one thing. These families were not around, this number of families were not around last April in 2019. And yet in April of 2020, there they are. Why? Well, we can intuit. Unemployment, they're all trapped together in the house. They're running out of money. Perhaps their mental health or substance abuse problems, which were perhaps under control, are less under control under all this stress. All those stressors are causing this spike. So we feel like it's really incumbent upon us to truly vet the serious injury cases that we will be seeing as a result of this pandemic. Because what a tragedy if some of these parent-child relationships, mother-child relationships, are just further victims of this virus.
So we hope this gives you a starting place if you do see a spike in these cases in the near future, or even a little further out. It goes without saying that safety is the most important thing, but we really do want to encourage that you do your own independent review so that you can know for sure that how you're moving forward is best for your particular client. So we hope that you don't see this kind of spike in your own area, but in the event you do, we hope this gives you some strategies that you can use to begin to approach your case. So thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Children's Law Podcast, brought to you by True North Child Advocates. Please take a moment to subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.